Have you ever felt a twinge of worry about AI taking over your job or diluting your creativity? Well, what if you could turn that fear into creative fuel? We've just published an amazing new ebook called The 4 Keys to Success in an AI World, and this is more than just a guide. It's a deep exploration into the human skills that AI can't touch, the skills that are essential for standing out and thriving no matter how much technology evolves. We're talking about real differentiators here like creativity, emotional intelligence, critical thinking, and much more. Inside, you'll find actionable insights and strategies to develop these skills, whether you're a creative person, a business person, or just simply someone who loves personal development. This isn't a story about tech taking over. It's a story of human creativity thriving alongside AI. Picture this: AI as your creative co-pilot, not just as a tool, but a collaborator that enhances your unique human skills. The 4 Keys ebook will show you exactly how to do that and view AI in a new way that empowers you instead of overshadows you. Transform your creative potential today. Head over to unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. Use the number 4, KEYS. That's unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. And download your free copy.
The groups that I organize them into before this analysis happens is based off of motivations, right? Like, what is motivating them? You'll tend to find certain groups or segments of motivations within the data that you've collected, certain kinds of motivations. Right. So once you've done that, then I do this analysis that I just spoke about for each of those groups of motivations, right? And that then allows me to say, okay, cool. This is the impact narrative, right? This is the sequential chain of motivations that this person needs to go through to hit all of these people that they want, right? And based off of what I know about how the brain works, about how behavior works, how cognitive biases work, this is going to be the most salient set of beagles for them. And this is going to be the best way to frame those beagles.
I'm Srini Rao, and this is the Unmistakable Creative Podcast, where you get a window into the stories and insights of the most innovative and creative minds who've started movements, built thriving businesses, written best-selling books, and created insanely interesting art. For more, check out our 500-episode archive at unmistakablecreative.com. In the first part of our conversation, you and I talked about this idea of visibility engineering sort of conceptually. Mm-hmm. You know, we kind of touched on this whole idea of how we create an impression and manage influence effectively.
Yeah.
And right as we were about to wrap up the conversation, you kind of, you know, left an open loop, which made me realize there's no way that we couldn't do this in two parts. So let's talk about, you know, how we actually put this into action.
Yeah.
Because, you know, last time I think what we were really talking about was data gathering, mm-hmm. Which I think that's the part that actually most of us, you know, do well. That's easy. Mm. But then it's putting that into action that I think really is where, you know, a lot of people run into trouble.
Yeah. Agreed. So, yeah. So what I would say to that is a couple of things, right? I think first things first, the reason that putting all of that data that we are gathering into action ends up being kind of, it brings in subpar results, I might say. Is largely because the models that we are dealing with are, how to put this kindly, outdated, not based off of what we know about human behavior, you know, take your pick. And I could point to like specific things, but, you know, okay, maybe I will.
That would be helpful.
Yeah. So, you know, how, you folks will do market research essentially or some variation of this, right? Quant or qualitative, and then they'll sort of pour all of that information into niching, let's say, right? Now the problem, a bunch of problems with niching, but one of the key problems is that it doesn't pay attention to or equip the people who are using it for behavior change, right? That's not its goal, really. And behavior change ultimately is the thing that we are trying to do, right? So like niching as a tool for behavior change is sort of obsolete. So that's an example of like the kind of thing that typically folks will do. And then they end up running into trouble. I think another issue with niching is that, again, and we've spoken about context and how important that is, but that it doesn't really adjust to context very well. It's not super flexible, right? Like you sort of set it and forget it. And that's the whole idea. But, you know, behavior doesn't work that way because the environments around us that generate and spark and inspire our behaviors don't work that way. So that's what I would say in terms of why folks end up running into trouble. In terms of how we can avoid this, I'd say two things. And I may or may not have brought this up in our previous conversation, but really focusing on motivation, right? Focusing on motivational drivers, the things in the environment that are generating our motivations, and using those two things almost to replace niching, right? Replacing niching, or however we want to select an intended audience, right? Replacing niching with something that takes into consideration not only the core motivations that people have, right, but the actual drivers in the environment that you, as an organization, as a person, whatever it happens to be, are specifically positioned to address, right? So replacing niching and other sort of targeting tactics with something like that. I have my own version of this, right? So I could talk at length about it, but I won't bore folks with that. But generally, those are the building blocks of what I have seen works and succeeds.
Yeah. You know, I think that you and I touched on context a little bit, you know, and I felt like I had to, you know, pull up this quote from Trevor Noah that I heard. It was on his last episode of The Daily Show. Mm-hmm. And I ended up transcribing it because I just thought it was so poignant. He said, "I feel like we live in an age of limitless information right now, but we never seem to acknowledge that there's a shortage of context."
Yeah.
And, you know, it's in many ways why I started doing Between the Scenes. I realized that in the short time I have on the show, there's only so much I can convey as a message. And, you know, that message is distilled and synthesized for people, but we process everything in bytes and we don't realize that we have a lot of information, but we don't have the context that is necessary for us to protect, to process that information, which is so important. Context is everything. It's truly everything.
Yeah.
And you know, and yet, yeah, the thing that, you know, we're talking about niching is like, so often we start with quantitative data.
Mm-hmm.
And context, I feel like, is this invisible layer that you really can't get from quantitative data. So how do you account for that in this process?
I have, in the course of sort of developing my theory of practice, right? I've sort of come up with some shortcuts or things that I use to do this, right? So usually I will do a couple of different analyses to help me pick up on this invisible layer that you're talking about. The first is something that I call a matters most analysis. And essentially what that is doing or is forcing me to do is to, is to understand the chain of motivations that people tend to have, right? This is something that I've observed, that when folks tend to struggle, when they're talking about what they do or, you know, drawing in the right sorts of people, you know, like any sort of problem that tends to come from like communicating, right? Often it's because they're trying to communicate more than one motivation at the same time. And what folks don't realize is that our motivations actually exist in a sequential chain, right? And so what this matters most analysis forces me to do as a practitioner is to stop and say, okay, what are all the motivations that I am equipped to support this person with, right? How do they, like, what is the impact narrative is what I call that sequence or that chain of motivations, right? But like, what is the chronological sequence of motivations that exists here, right? Like which one of these things has to happen first before all the others, and then which has to happen after that first one, but before everything else, right? Going through that process. And then borrowing from what behavioral science has to say about the things that we pay attention to, given the various kinds of contexts we find ourselves in, right? And so I know, for example, that if I'm dealing with a certain kind of person and their world looks a certain kind of way, that they're going to be hyperbolically discounting really intensely. And so that means that they're going to be paying closer attention to the earlier parts of that motivational chain or that impact narrative versus the later parts. Whereas somebody who is in a different environment has different motivational drivers. Maybe they are looking to improve something, right? Rather than like fixing something. Maybe they're looking to improve something. Those folks tend to be focused on the later parts of that chain, right? So I've developed lots of little analyses and things like this that force me to pull in the context so that I always have it at hand when I'm going about the work that I do. Does that answer your question in any way?
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
As creators, we're always on the move. Whether it's a live podcast event, a pop-up shop, or a workshop, we're constantly interacting with community, and that's where Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe comes in. Imagine this. You're at a live event, a listener loves your merch, or a participant wants to sign up for your course on the spot. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, you can accept their payments right there and then, right from your iPhone, so there's no extra hardware or no delays. Total game changer. It's not just for creators. Any business owner can do this. It's about making transactions smoother and much more personal, growing your business in your way. We've been using Stripe for our products and courses for a long time, and now with Tap to Pay on iPhone, you can take your business to the next level too. So visit stripe.com/tapiphone to learn more. Remember, folks, with Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, your business is always at your fingertips.
It kind of does, but like I want to make it a bit more concrete. So sure. Let's just use a real life example. So I have survey data from, you know, having surveyed our email list about, you know, sort of what their goals, their interests are with utilizing generative AI for creative work. Mm. So, you know, based on, you know, whatever questions I've like, let's just look at that sort of as a place. And I mean, typically what I'll ask them is, you know, what are your big challenges? What are your obstacles? and what do you want to be able to in a very simplified, dumbed down version.
Sure.
So using that sort of as a jump off point, you know, how would we apply what you just said to that? Like, how
Absolutely. So what I would do is I would take all of that information, especially that last question. That last question is actually super helpful. And I'd say, okay, cool. These constitute the sort of mechanical might not be the right word, but like the things that people want to be able to do, right? Or overcome or avoid or, you know, like whatever it happens to be, right? These represent the things that people want to do, right? Then you want to take it up a level and say, okay, cool. What kind of person do they have to be in order for them to be able to do these things, right? And that's just coming from the behavioral science principle that when you label somebody as a thing, you're more likely to affect their behavior, right? And so you find what that label happens to be, like who it is they have to be in order to allow for that to happen. Once you have that, and I tend to call them B goals, right? Once you have your list of B goals, then what I will do is I will put them in sequential order, right? What has to happen first before any of these other things, right? Which what B goal do they need to meet before any of these other ones are possible, right? And continue to do them until we get the last one. And then that's when I'll do the kind of analysis that I was talking about. Saying, okay, behaviorally, based off what this data has already told me, is hyperbolic discounting something that's going on here? Are they looking more to the future? Is this something in the middle? And what does that mean in terms of how we want to frame the relevant B goal, right? So that's usually what that will look like, just super, super quickly, super generally. And go ahead.
So as I understand it, so basically what you're doing is categorizing these people into groups and saying, okay, what type of person do they need to be to achieve XYZ goal? And then, you know, what's needed to become that type of person?
Yeah, sort of. So I'll get even more specific, right? In that the groups that I organized them into before this analysis happens is based off of motivations, right? Like what is motivating them? You'll tend to find certain groups or segments of motivations within the data that you've collected, certain kinds of motivations, right? Mm-hmm. So once you've done that, then I do this analysis that I just spoke about for each of those groups of motivations, right? And that then allows me to say, okay, cool. This is the impact narrative, right? This is the sequential chain of motivations that this person needs to go through to hit all of these goals that they want, right? And based off of what I know about how the brain works, about how behavior works, how cognitive biases work, this is going to be the most salient set of B goals for them. And this is going to be the best way to frame those B goals.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just one analysis out of like maybe five or six.
Yeah. So that's the first step, right? So let's go into the next one.
Oh my gosh. We could be here all day. We haven't even gotten into the influence. Gosh.
Well, give us the soundbite versions. We'll put together something for our listeners so they can.
Sure. So, I mean, that's sort of the first level of sort of contextual analysis that I tend to do looking for motivational drivers, right? The others, it will depend again based off of stuff, right? But usually you're looking the kinds of resources that they are dealing with, right? And how much of those resources they have or feel like they have, right? Because perception is really key here. Another kind of analysis that I tend to do is looking where they fall on something that I've been calling colloquially in my head as the investment index, right? But like just in terms of how much they have invested in the relevant equals that we just spoke about, where do they fall on a scale of like just sort of getting started essentially to like, we're looking to refine our approach to doing this thing. Right. Mm-hmm. And there's a whole bunch of underlying information that we can get once we place them somewhere on that scale. Gosh, I'm trying to think. Kinds of analyses do I do? Yeah. I'll do an assessment of, their mental models, right? So basically when it comes to the relevant set of eagles that we're talking about, how do they think the world works, right? Mapping that out. So like things like that, right? I will do those kinds of analyses, probably more, it depends. But I'll do analyses like that. And that allows me to have on hand that sort of invisible layer of context that you were talking about. And that information is so, so key. What I tend to find is that, folks will, especially the folks that I tend to work with, right? They'll be in a situation where they think that things are secure. And that's largely because, you know, they have an active audience. They have, offers that people are interested in, or people are volunteering to be part of the organization. They have, an active board or active, set of donors, like whatever that happens to be, like that behavioral thing that they are looking to have and continue to maintain, right? Like they have that thing, and like while it's not perfect and like exactly where they'd want it to be and isn't maybe scaling quickly as they would like, they have that thing and they feel like that's a floor beneath which they can't or won't fall generally, barring something insane, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what I've found often, and I find myself saying this a lot, is that what you have there is actually stability. It's not security. Security is stability across time, right? And in order to have that, you need to be able to remain hyper-relevant across contexts, right? And so that means even when, like, we have a pandemic and the floor falls out from under us and there's a big R word or, you know, recession, because I'm not afraid of it. But you're like, even when the world feels like it is ending, right? That is context. That's a possible context that is within the realm of possibility. And if you are not equipped or don't have a system in place for shifting how you do things, right? Like how you manage your influence and how you manage the impression that you give and communicate, right? If you don't have a tool or means of managing those things, even in that context, then what you have is stability, not security. And so that's why this invisible layer of context that you've been talking about is so key, because it becomes then the foundation for that framework, for that system that allows you to shift pretty fluently between contexts, right? So anyway.
Well, let's get into the influence piece, and let's think about this from a standpoint. Like, first, let's define what influence is, because like I have always joked, I was like, influencers don't influence shit, as far as I'm concerned, other than their own egos. Like, I'm sorry, having 1 million followers on Instagram doesn't qualify you as an influencer. A mother who works 3 jobs to put food on the table for her kids is more of an influencer
than some person
who basically puts up, you know, hundreds of selfies of themselves.
Oh my gosh. To hate on content creators at all, but yes,
I think that the idea of influence is often people confuse influence and impact, in my opinion.
Agreed. Yeah.
So let's define influence from your perspective first, because I think we have to start with a definition.
Yeah, I agree. And this is something that is currently in flux for me. So take it with a grain of salt. But I do connect it to the definition that I think I gave you last time we spoke about what a brand is, right?
Yeah.
Which is just a system of ideas that influences the behavior of other people, right? Or a type of system of ideas, right? Like not all such systems of ideas are brands, and so forth, right? So when I'm talking about influencing, right, and influencing behavior, I'm talking about the ability to affect how someone develops, how they act, or how they think, right? That's sort of the working definition that I have right now. But that is something that I'm keeping an eye on in terms of where tweaks may need to be made. But that's the working definition that I have right now.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, so let's talk about using, you know, sort of what we've got so far based on everything you've said to start, you know, actually, you know, creating influence, and whether that is, you know, getting somebody to buy a product, getting somebody to subscribe to a newsletter, getting somebody to tell a friend about what you've created.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So this is where, I cannot fangirl hard enough over Damon Santola. but I will try. and again, the man has almost no idea who I am. I think we spoke over email once and he was very kind. But this is where network analysis becomes key and very interesting, right? The idea here is that once you have all of this impression stuff that we've been talking about up until now developed and managed, right, and able to be managed across context, right, then what you want to do is start designing your network for behavior change. And I say this for two reasons. One, because everything that we've been talking about, right? Buy more, donate here, all of that is behavior change, right? Getting someone to go from not doing that to doing that behavior change, right?
Mm-hmm.
But also because when we're talking about the context of folks who are underrecognized, which is something that I brought up briefly before, and visibility biases and all of that, right? There's sort of another layer there of behavior change that needs to happen, right? Because right now, the default, if you're an underrecognized person, the default is for folks to overlook you, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so in order to overcome that so that all those other things, those great things that we're talking about can happen, behavior change needs to happen there as well. Right. That is a change in behavior. And it's the way that, Santola would talk about it, a complex behavior change, right? It's a complex change, right?
Complex as opposed contagions.
To, exactly. It's a complex contagion as opposed to a simple one, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so this is where network science and network analysis, comes in. And concretely, what I'm doing with folks here is that we are mapping out, like literally mapping out graphically, your network, right? So that we can see the literal geometric shape that your network is in. And that allows us to say, okay, well, your shape is like this. And we want to build it towards something that's more of a fishnet, right? If we're looking for something that facilitates complex behavior change or more of a snowflake, if we're looking for, you know, maybe something closer to a power broker orientation, right? Like different network shapes facilitate different goals. And so that's why mapping out your network graphically is so, so useful, right? So there's that, right? The actual mapping out of your network. And then there's the actual routine, right? Like the actual thing that you're going to be doing every day, every week, every month, every quarter, every year. That's going to be growing your network towards the shape that it needs to be in for your goals to happen, right? And this is what I mean when I say designing your network for behavior change, because this is how you can expand your sphere of influence, right? Intentionally, not just sort of randomly. You want to build your network towards some of these tipping points, that lead to, you know, some of the things that we've read in Santola's work, you know, like the contagion taking over the network, or, gosh, who was that person that you mentioned the last time? He wrote Contagion.
Jonah Berger.
Jonah Berger. That's right. Yes. Jonah Berger. Yes. Some of the things that he, speaks about in terms of virality, right? But like we're talking about like complex virality in this case. Right? Like those all sort of been at specific tipping points, right? And Santola's work does talk about this basic tipping point that's at least 25% of the network, right? Strategically selected points, parts of the network, nodes in the network, right? Mm-hmm. But this number fluctuates and changes depending on, who we're dealing with, what kind of entity we're dealing with, what the goal is, what, you know, like this number fluctuates, right? I would say a 25% minimum, if anything, but you're building towards tipping points, right? You're building towards, I call them visibility tipping points. And that's the whole purpose of the influence management part of what I do, right? Equipping folks to do that intentionally over time. And to leverage when you have like those mini wins along the way, right? So that you can leverage that into more momentum towards those tipping points and towards ultimately that behavior change at scale that you're looking for.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters, May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
As creators, we're always on the move. Whether it's a live podcast event, a pop-up shop, or a workshop, we're constantly interacting with community, and that's where Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe comes in. Imagine this. You're at a live event, a listener loves your merch, or a participant wants to sign up for your course on the spot. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, you can accept their payments right there and then, right from your iPhone, so there's no extra hardware or no delays. Total game changer. It's not just for creators. Any business owner can do this. It's about making transactions smoother and much more personal, growing your business in your way. We've been using Stripe for our products and courses for a long time, and now with Tap to Pay on iPhone, you can take your business to the next level too. So visit stripe.com/tapiphone to learn more. Remember, folks, with Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, your business is always at your fingertips.
Mm-hmm. So one thing I'm curious, this is a morbid curiosity. How do you actually map the shape of a network? Like, let's say you had an email list. How would you even do that? Like, what do you use to do that?
Okay. Yeah. So right now they have like clients use a simple, what is it called? Is it diagrams.net? I don't know. Like there are tools that like let you just sort of do diagrams, right? Mm-hmm. And so what I tend to do is I have a process that I take my clients through to make this easier. Essentially, we start with, okay, who are the folks that y'all have been in contact with? And when I say in contact, I mean, you've contacted them and they have contacted you right back, right? Who are those mm-hmm. people within the last month, within the last 3 months, within the last 6 months? a year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, right? Like that sort of thing. That's probably more rings than I actually do, right? But like, if we're doing this super well, it's kind of what we're thinking about, right? So yeah. This allows you to be a little less overwhelmed by the number of people that you have to bear possibly in your network, right? But just like slowly over time, filling out those networks. And then to the best of your ability, showing how they are connected to each other, right? Are they strong ties or are they weak ties? Often they're going to be weak ties, right? Almost always they're going to be weak ties. Sometimes they're not ties at all, right? And that's fine. Sometimes you don't know who else other members of the network that you are associated with or connected to are connected to. And that's fine. That might be something that you then go and find out in some sort of survey, or if the network is insanely huge, you go and find out, in more qualitative ways, right? But that's what I would say, right? Like, start with sort of what I would think of as like the inner ring. And this isn't necessarily the people that you have the strongest ties to. This is just in terms of recency, right? Of connection. And then just keep going outwards until the number becomes kind of ridiculous. So that's what I would say. I mean, I don't know the size of your list, but this is probably something that, that tech and AI could probably help you with.
That's precisely what I was thinking. But you know what I was thinking as you were saying that was the place I would do it first is with my podcast guests.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's what I would suggest
too. My first thought was, how is there not some sort of technology tool to do this? Because this sounds incredibly manual and crazy.
I know. And I've been looking for something like this. I mean, like there is always the, what is that tool? There's a tool that, Centola has, folks who take his various like network science course things use. I don't remember the name of it because I only use it when I'm like trying to model something new. Like I'm trying to model, something in particular, not necessarily someone's network, like a contagion essentially, right?
Yeah.
So I don't use it super, super often. But there is a tool for that, but it's not the kind of thing that you're thinking about. It's a different tool. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I agree. Like, how is there not a thing that already does this? I don't know. Well, it's very frustrating. It's
simple. You and I will basically ask ChatGPT what would take to build this.
Yes.
And we'll learn and then we'll build it.
And then we will build it. Yeah.
And it'll take 5 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. You know what? Done. Finished. I love it when a great plan comes together. I love that. Let's do that.
All right. So talk to me about next. Like, we kind of looked at this sort of at this invisible layer that nobody actually sees publicly, right? This is all happening behind the scenes. So then how does this shape, you know, sort of the way that you tell stories, the way that you are presenting yourself, the way that you brand yourself, all of that?
So that honestly kind of pulls me back into the impression management side of things. So I'm trying to see what like a clean way of talking about this would be. So let's go with the example of like changing copy somewhere, right? Mm-hmm. Like let's say on a website. Yeah. So this actually brings me back to the matters most analysis that I was talking about and like the various other contextual analyses that I do. I call them POV formulas in my head or POV filters. But just like point of view filters or point of view formulas in my head, right? And what sort of comes hand in hand with these is an understanding of, what's the thing that's going to capture people's attention right now, right? So let's say that we have got somebody with a motivation that, I'm going to get more specific here. Let's say we've got somebody who is looking to get more love on bigger stages. Let's say that. Uh-huh. Let's say that that is their motivation, right? And let's say that we also know that that is the, let's say that we know that the big goal that comes from that is, gosh, what would be an example? Let's say a highly rated speaker, right? Let's keep it super simple. Not my most elegant work, but we're on the clock, right? So let's say the relevant B goal here is being a highly rated speaker, right? I know because of what I understand about how brains and behavior works, right? That this person might be doing a bit of paying attention to things that are more immediate, right? And so what that means is that they are likely looking for some kind of prescription to being a more highly rated speaker or being a highly rated speaker, right? And so if they're looking for a prescription for that, then all of the things that come with that are also relevant, right? So a prescription is something that's not a heavy lift. A prescription is something that feels certain, right? Like you get a prescription, you go to the pharmacy, you get your medication, the medication works, right? It is something that is, solid, something that has got them taken care of, right? Like all of these things that sort of come with that, like all of these framing mechanisms that come with the idea of a prescription, right, are true here. And so what that means is that when I'm then going to go, and this is just for one, contextual level, right? There are multiples, but this means that when I'm then going to, let's say, change up my sales page for, this offer that I am putting out there in the world, right? That I'm making sure that the thing that I am offering is framed as a prescription to this beagle, as a prescription to being a highly rated speaker, right? And all of the things that are connected to a prescription, all of the things that somebody who is in this, I just need a fix mentality is dealing with are things that are included in the framing, in the language that I'm choosing to use on this sales page. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. And so that's one layer of applying contextual stuff, right? All the other analyses that I spoke about before introduce other facets that do similar things, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you also want to think about this sales page, right? This web page. What point in our relationship with this person is this page showing up, right? Because that then tells us, what other things are going to capture attention, right? And this sort of gets to, I could go all day about this, but, this kind of gets to at this point, does this person care about what is sort of interesting and idiosyncratic about you? Do they care about the impact that your work has previously had? Is it some combination of the two? Do they just care about the feeling that, you give them, right? Which of these things is most important and most salient to them, right? Because that's then another layer that you want to think about. And that's going to depend on what point in our relationship we are with them, what point they're seeing the sales page, right? There's lots of different little sort of angles and layers here, but that's ultimately what it looks like if we're talking about applying this in a very practical, it's a sales page, what do we do here way.
Yeah. Are there knowing brands that just do this inherently and do it well?
I think a good example of a brand that does this well and has been doing it well for quite some time is Japan. And I know you were expecting me to name a company mm-hmm. or an influencer or somebody with a personal brand. But that also assumes that I pay close enough attention across a long enough period of time to be able to tell, you know, someone is doing this well over time. And I often am not always paying that close enough attention. But for bigger entities like nation states, which yes, of course have brands, I would say that Japan has been doing a really, really good job, not only of impression management, but of influence management as well. I might need to. Nope, that's where I'll stop.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
So, talking about the results that people have experienced as a result of this, in terms of sort of, you know, where they were at prior to going through this process and where they were after.
Yeah. So I've got there's this one small company. It's like a family owned company. That I love, Black owned, really great, and the product is amazing. And before we started working together, they weren't even sure which of their products they were selling, right? They were kind of selling all of them. Spaghetti at the wall method, I might say, right?
Yeah.
After our working with each other, they're in, God, something like 300-400 stores across the US now. They have huge deals, including with like, the Navy, I think, if I'm remembering correctly. Brad Pitt them like a shout out or something like that, like took a picture with their product. You know, just like lots of really great things are happening for this like tiny, tiny, tiny company. So that's like, that's sort of an example, right? That like, and they're getting invited to all sorts of places, instead of having to like grind and seek out those kinds of opportunities, right? So that's one example. I think a huge example that I sometimes we'll talk about, but have to say, like, I was only a very small part of the team that made this happen, was some work that I did when I was consulting on the civil war in Yemen. And this wasn't the only sort of conflict situation that I was consulting on. But I think it's just like the clearest example. And again, I was a super small part of this team, like junior members, so small, such a small part of this team. But the goal was to get this, ethnic minority essentially from being overlooked, in various diplomatic fora, like the UN and what have you, to being a part of the peace negotiations that were happening with the UN. And by the end of my involvement in particular file, they were. So that's just sort of like an example of like the scale of effect that impression management and influence management just sort of taken together, in various proportions can, right? Like when you're really intentionally engineering your visibility and all the constituent pieces of that, these are the kinds of things that could happen, right? And it's not just restricted to personal brands, and it's not just restricted to the private sector, and it's not just restricted to money, right? Sometimes we're talking like peace negotiations, right?
Yeah.
So yeah.
You know, now I completely understand why Nikki referred you to me, Nikki knows me well. Clearly, she has a really good sense of what my impression is of people. Like, it makes complete sense that she referred you. Now that we've gone through this, I mean, this is honestly one of those interviews where I feel like I'll be dissecting the transcript like endlessly and using AI to like apply it to things for weeks on end. Because I think you've just packed it with so much practical insight that really makes us rethink. And really, I mean, you've basically given us a series of experiments to conduct.
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, that's the highest possible praise I have ever received. So thank you so much, truly.
Well, and I have ruthless standards. So, you know, this has honestly been incredible. Like, I honestly feel like this is one of those that will go into our, you know, best of the year series, because you've just, you know, made this so insightful and thought provoking. So I want to finish with my final question.
Yeah.
What do you think it is that makes somebody or something unmistakable?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I've been thinking about what I would say to this question. And I think I'm going to self-servingly quote myself when I answer this and say that I think what makes someone unmistakable is a penchant for not settling. And I'll say what I mean very specifically, that many, and this is not a negative, right? But many will settle for disrupting present, right? I think those who are unmistakable and go on to become legacies are folks who don't settle for that and instead aspire to shape the future. So that's what I would say.
Amazing. Well, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to join us and share your, you know, insights and wisdom with our listeners. Where can people learn about you and your work?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you have many questions, every month I run a visibility clinic and it's essentially a Q&A. So feel free to come and join and ask your questions. I'm happy to answer. Otherwise, you can find me on Instagram and on LinkedIn, where I am sharing new insights as far as LinkedIn is concerned, or, I am sharing sort of what's going on behind the scenes or interesting, bits of news that sort of relate to these concepts as I do on, Instagram. So those are generally what I would suggest. If you're looking for deeper stuff, right? You want to talk to me one-on-one, or you just kind of want to be in my orbit for a little while, I'm sure we can leave some links for stuff like that below. But yeah, that's what I'd say.
All right. And for everybody listening, we will wrap the show with that.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack
for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, welcome to the Next Wave podcast. Consider us your chief AI officer in your business. My name is Matt Wolf. I have the number one YouTube channel in the AI space. I also run FutureTools.com, and I'm joined by my co-host, Nathan Lands, founder of Lore.com. We want to bring you the latest AI news and trends, show you how you can use AI in your business and personal life, and help make it super easy for you to understand and execute. We're going to equip you with the knowledge to thrive in this upcoming wave of change.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Have you ever felt a twinge of worry about AI taking over your job or diluting your creativity? Well, what if you could turn that fear into creative fuel? We've just published an amazing new ebook called The 4 Keys to Success in an AI World, and this is more than just a guide. It's a deep exploration into the human skills that AI can't touch, the skills that are essential for standing out and thriving no matter how much technology evolves. We're talking about real differentiators here like creativity, emotional intelligence, critical thinking, and much more. Inside, you'll find actionable insights and strategies to develop these skills, whether you're a creative person, a business person, or just simply someone who loves personal development. This isn't a story about tech taking over. It's a story of human creativity thriving alongside AI. Picture this: AI as your creative co-pilot, not just as a tool, but a collaborator that enhances your unique human skills. The 4 Keys ebook will show you exactly how to do that and view AI in a new way that empowers you instead of overshadows you. Transform your creative potential today. Head over to unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. Use the number 4, K-E-Y-S. That's unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. And download your free copy.